J6, number 3B.
Right, so I think that's clear, so let's just love it and hold to it. Then she shows that a divine philosophy has another point, which we would call a point of Christianity. Every divine philosophy has to have an outcome of the Word and the Christ, and the outcome of that divine philosophy which heals and saves as a Christ idea is a spiritual Christianity embracing divine healing. So the outcome of a divine philosophy based on a principle God which heals and saves as a Christ, the outcome, Christianity is always outcome as we'll see, is the outcome in eternal history. The outcome is a spiritual manhood, a spiritual idea, a spiritual Christianity, embracing healing. It heals. If you have your healing in Christianity, that Christ idea heals. Mankind is healed. A man becomes the image and likeness of God for having a divine philosophy. Spiritual Christianity, see, not just any Christianity. And there she said that in miscellaneous writings where she says, today we behold but the first faint view of a more spiritual Christianity that embraces a deeper and broader philosophy. And then every divine philosophy has a science tone. And she says there that, so good, in miscellaneous writings on 364:10, she said, divine philosophy is not the search after wisdom, it is wisdom. Is God's right hand grasping the universe? See, that's the big point of a divine philosophy versus human philosophy. Again, she says, divine philosophy is, and you could write that here in the science tone, divine philosophy is not the search after wisdom. See, that's what human philosophy does. It's always searching after wisdom. It always eludes wisdom. You see, it always wants to know. It's always on the path. Loving the discussion in the coffee shops, again, is of the thesis, and then the other fellow arguing the antithesis, and then they finally agreeing on some type of synthesis. They love that. It goes on and on and on and on. That's always in a process, always in a state. They don't want to ever stop it. They get mad if you feel you have an answer. Well, they can't have an answer. It just goes on and on. But Mrs. Eddy says, that's not divine philosophy. Divine philosophy is not the search after wisdom. It is wisdom. Hear the isness of science. It is wisdom. It is in a state of being. You don't have to search after it is. That divine principle, God, is wisdom. You don't have to pursue it. It comes to you. God brings you wisdom, which is the Christ that has the Messiah, which heals in Christianity. And that is according to God's right hand. God's doing it. See, you get that sense that God is grasping the universe, that self-operating, self-interpreting science of divine cybernetics here, that science point, that God is wisdom. And because God is wisdom, it's self-interpreting, self-explaining itself to the universe. So you always get science feeding back to the Word. Because God is wisdom and is explaining itself to the universe, then it explains itself how? As the Word, as the divine principle, the divine philosophy. Always, BSC reads, feed that science point. Always goes back to the Word, it feeds back. That's what it is, how it interprets itself. So the Word, Christ in Christianity, is the way God interprets itself, is the philosophy, is what's going on. It's wonderful. It's so big. You see how big her philosophy is. It just isn't a statement, but it has a Christ, it has an outcome of healing, and it is then of science. It is wisdom, which in itself is self-interpreting the universe. Yes, so we go on and see then that big point, I think, that we will feel how Christian Science, what Mrs. Eddy gave, certainly isn't an emotional religion, is it? I think where she said in her introductory remarks and preface how the time for thinkers has come, and that certainly isn't an intellectual effort, which it involves an intellectual approach, a reasoning approach, but also a spiritual response. By what we learn through concept building, we certainly walk around with, as I said last evening, and build it up as the tonality of our consciousness. Once it becomes the tonality of our consciousness, it becomes our very own being. So Mrs. Eddy's subject appeals to an intelligent approach to reality, and not a lazy approach, certainly, is it? It demands something of us. It demands our willingness to approach reality, find out what is reality and how do I become one with reality. It demands an intelligent response. I can see that in every other walk of life, in business, whether we're artists, whether we're a scientist, just businessman, every other walk of life, we seem to realize amongst ourselves that it takes an intelligent approach and a lot of work to accomplish something. I mean, as somebody who is an accomplished on the flute, let's say, we know that to be a terrific player and professional, the hours and hours of practice, you see, responding to the principle of music that goes into being performing as a concert violinist or whatever, we can see that that's Christianity. It's that practice. It's a responding. You see, that's that man's obligation, is to respond to the principle, in whatever it is, to practice, exercise in responding to the principles of any subject, whether it is in learning an instrument so that one becomes a professional, whether it responding to the principles of mathematics so one becomes a mathematician, help out in the space industry, whether one is responding to the principles of management, then to finally be a manager in some corporation. Whatever we do, the Christianity tone of man is to respond to those principles and to practice them and to be diligent about it. But I always stand in awe that when it comes to the realm of the spiritual things, we go to sleep. I mean, we don't want to work at it. I can remember a young lawyer who came to my classes, the first classes I ever gave in this summer school in 1975, though I began classes in Seattle in 1970. But my first classes for the summer school program with the Kepler Institute in about 1975, the introductory, when Max wanted to put on an introductory class, a young student came from San Francisco area, lawyer, and she stayed for a day and left, and she says, "I can really appreciate what you're doing. In fact, I really can have an insight into that being the answers to so many questions that I have asked," she says, "but I work all day at law and I just don't want to work at the spiritual realm also." She says, "I just don't want to have to work at it." And she's honest. She says, "I work all day, I study all day, my work is difficult, my practice is difficult, I just have to chase it all the time, and now to come in and have to chase the spiritual, it's asking too much. I just want it to happen to me." Well, I understand it. Well, one has complete empathy towards that standpoint. I know. But unfortunately, it's true about the spiritual realm also. To become a master, Mrs. Eddy said, it has to be a discovery. It is, she says, work, watch, and pray. Therefore, yes, it is. One has to put in time to practice the concepts of the spiritual. It doesn't come naturally. To Jesus, it came naturally. What comes naturally to us is to look at the world from the standpoint of ignorance, from mortal mind, from negative thinking, from spirit, from good and evil, saying, "Well, those people are rotten, inherently evil, awful. I'm good. I'm self-righteous." It's natural to look at the world from the sense of body, that the body complains. "Well, how are you?" "Well, I don't feel so well today." You know, the liver complaint or the arm complaint. It's natural to look at the world that we give people authority, that we give the boss control over our lives, that if things aren't going well with our relationship with the boss, then the whole world is coming to an end. We give a false sense of authority to personality and let them govern us. We give false authority to that whole cycle of birth, maturity, and death, to sickness, to fear. We give so much authority to fear or hate or jealousy. We tend to look naturally at the world from the human system of reference, the second record of creation, as we'll see. It's not natural to look at the world from the standpoint of the divine mind viewing the world as its ideas. That mind is the law. Mind is the basis. Mind is the basis of our creativity. That our creativity comes from the divine mind, that all-knowing mind that doesn't have to be educated. That we have that mind of God, she says. It doesn't need to be educated. It's all-knowing. Well, we certainly feel much more natural of thinking we're dumb or ignorant, in that we've reached our Peter principle. We've gone as far as we can go in life, and we're just dumb, and we can't figure out all these things that are going on in the world, all these isms and ologies and new concepts and new ideas. That's beyond me. I'll never get it. You're smart. I'm dumb. So that's that. See, that's easy for us to do that. It's hard to think that I'm of the one mind, that all-knowing mind, and to exercise it, the mind which is God is my mind, and that it's an all-intelligent mind. And that mind knows the end from the beginning. It knows that realm of pre-established perfection made known. It's a mind which goes out from love. It's teleological. It sees the end from the beginning. It knows the goal, and it's guiding and leading me creatively towards that pre-established realm of my identity. And therefore, I trust that mind. I trust the vision that comes to me. Every day, I know that I am living forth that perfect realm of ideas, that my life, every split second, is coming forth from the Father. That perfection is being made known every day. We really wake up every morning and think we're ignorant and imperfect, and we're no good. But to wake up every day and say, no, we're of the divine mind, and the perfection of our identity is being made known step by step. It's leading us in the fulfillment of our identity as the Son of God into our right place in being, that we have a place in being. We have talents that nobody else have. We're unique, and that God will make those talents available where they have to be made available, that we aren't just useless. We're not a wanderer in the wilderness. We don't have to accept that we have a place. We're needed. We're unique. Nobody else can take our position, regardless of what others say about us or run us down or think we're no good. We aren't. We're the Son of God. We have a mission. Nobody can do it. We will accomplish it. I mean, these are attitudes that we don't live with every day. And especially when we look at one point that we're a failure, or we feel that people we've been done a number on, you know, let's say in a job or a business through jealousy or competition. It happens all the time that in offices, think how people are run down. Not that the people aren't good or capable in their jobs, but through jealousy or competition to get ahead, it's gotten in the wrong attitude about us is there. Well, we have to not accept that, you see. Nobody can take away our identity. Nobody can take away our mission. I think of how Winston Churchill said, you know, how did he make it? He said, well, all those years that nobody believed in me, I believed in myself, you see. But we have to believe in all those empty years, those years of fasting and famine and in the wilderness, that we are the Son of God. We have a unique place, that nobody can rob us of our identity. That's what the Christ shows us as we go on. We are that principle. But we're infinitely individualized and adapted to a specific situation. And we've got to keep knowing that and have the guts to go forward and to be the Son of God in spite of the persecution. And we all get it. We all get the persecution. I mean, everybody's going to tell us we're no good. I mean, the minute you do something, somebody will come along and says it's no good. That's awful. You do this wrong, that wrong, and you just might as well go to the garbage heap. So, I mean, all of us could at one point in our lives say, you're right, to the garbage heap I go. But then you think, what am I going to do there? I don't like it there. I have to keep working at my identity and keep identifying myself with principle. keep practicing it, and sure, and we get refined. So you see, it takes practice to be the Son of God. It takes practice to see the world from the standpoint of mind, from the standpoint of spirit, from the standpoint of soul, from the standpoint of principle, life, truth, and love. We've got to respond. It's not fatalism. Well, as I said, live, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. We have to wander along. That was our lot in life, to be wanderers. No. So we have to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps, so to speak, and respond to seeing the world from this divine philosophy. Do we see that? It's such a important point. So yes, I can understand how a lawyer would come to our work and say, well, this is too much work. So go off and do something else, you see. But it has to be. It's a time for thinkers have come. We finally learn to love it. And finally, we are not happy with seeing the world from any other view than from the spiritual realm. And we begin to get fruition in our life. It begins to work. If we have radical reliance on the principle, we submit ourselves to the principle, it has an outcome. So we go on then and see then that, finishing up this point of divine philosophy, is then that we are adherents to a divine philosophy which states that we go out from a principle God, from mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And that has a Christ, that has a Savior, a Messiah, which then heals the universe, including man, and that is wisdom. We don't have to search after it. It just is wisdom always being made known. Now, the question is, can other philosophies help us? Well, Mrs. Eddy says, only about the other philosophies we saw is that they have occasional gleams of truth borrowed from the truly divine science. They dimly reflect Jesus' words and teaching. They have faint gleams. It's slow to discern the spiritual. So the only positive point, she says, about the human philosophies is that they sometimes see the truth. That they have isolated views of what mind is about, or spirit is about, or soul is about, or principle, life, truth, and love, or the word Christ, Christianity, and science, or science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. But under that point of unity and good where she says, do I monopolize? She says, well, I guess so. Because she says, mine is the only system that absolutely shows the allness of God in the unreality of sin, disease, and death. Everything else goes out from the two-valued logic of good and evil. My system is the only one that goes out wholly from God. And she says, and that is the difference. And so we know that Christian science, as she gave us, is the only system that goes out from all the categories of being in their entirety. It goes out totally from the seven synonymous terms, the fourfold operation, and from the four levels of consciousness as given in the model of being. It is a complete scientific system. None of the others are complete. And then the last point that I want to bring out that in that little paper I gave out was then that we always go out from God. Everything comes from revelation. From the divine mind, we've got to learn to pray that mind which is God is our mind. We have no other mind, and that mind is an all-knowing, all-intelligent mind. It already knows itself. See, that's what Mrs. Eddy said. That's how she could write Science and Health. Because she says, no human pen nor tongue taught me the science contained in this book, Science and Health. I got nothing of it from ancient systems. She said it was the gift of the grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power. It is not after man. It was through revelation. So she said that the Bible had graciously prepared her thought to trust the divine mind, to trust to go out from revelation. And she said that those synonymous terms came to her when she began to realize that mind is the all-knowing mind and knows itself. That when she could go out and accept for herself that she was of that mind, the divine mind, it was her natural origin. She wasn't of the human mind, but that her origin really was the Son of God, and that mind which is God was her mind, and that that mind knows itself. It doesn't have to be educated. Radical to the human mind. Because the human believes that it has to have education, that the mind has to be taught. But look how radical Christian Science is. Radical says, no, mind doesn't need to be taught, it knows. Well, that's totally foreign to our way of thinking. To think that there is a realm where we don't have to learn through books. It just knows. That doesn't have anything to do with our human education. We've never been taught that. So, Christian Science is revolutionary. There is that realm of pre-established perfection where mind knows. So she appealed to it, and she said once she appealed to that realm of mind, that it just came pouring forth. She wrote it through inspiration. It just revealed itself to her. When you look at the textbook, no human mind could figure out the structure of that textbook. It had to be written through inspiration. And therefore, written because of its system. It's too perfect. The Bible is too perfect of a structure. We stand in awe of, let's say, the four Gospels as they're studying this week up in the other class. Well, you look at the structure of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. How could that be written by the human mind? It's just beautiful. Or the textbook, any of the chapters in the textbook, it's impossible. So because we stand in awe of its lessons, we know that she couldn't sit down and figure it out. She wouldn't have had enough time. So she herself says she's just a willing disciple at the mind of Christ. Even in her preface, Mrs. Eddy says that in 1907, she just began to read the book through consecutively to elucidate her idealism. She says, I never read this book through myself. I don't really know what I've put out here until 1907. I'm beginning to understand what I wrote. Well, she started writing it in her revelation came that life was in and of God, Spirit, the divine mind, in 1866. She gave us the first edition in 1875, and she had 332 revisions of the textbook. Well, that's a lot of revisions. And not until 1907, when she was at the end of all those revisions, before she leaves us in 1910, that she said, I've read the book through, and I'm beginning to understand what I've written. Well, she's saying, I didn't write it. So, It's foreign. I remember a friend of mine, good friend in Seattle, who said when I was early on teaching, she says, okay, now what you're doing is fine, but I want you to do one thing when you go to your class. Don't tell them that this is based on revelation. They'll think that it's airy-fairy and they'll leave, you see. They'll just it'll be of no substance to them, you see. It'll act as if it's mystical. Well, it is based on revelation. And for a while, Mrs. Eddy says, that's abstract glory to us. Doesn't make any sense. But she says that will become concrete being. That Christian Science will become natural. Keep working, keep allowing, keep responding to the Christ idea. Okay, so we see then that another reason why our classes are small. They're not, everyone is willing. What did Max say? Not everyone is willing to go on with the spiritual realm. He says it in this way. He says that many are called or few are chosen, quoting the Bible. And he said when he read in the Bible that point of many are called or few are chosen, he always was annoyed because he thought that God was being selective, thinking, well, God just likes a few. Many are called, but God only chose a few to serve him. Then he began to realize, oh no, many are called, everybody is called, only a few choose themselves to respond. Eventually all must respond, but at this point in time and space, only a few choose to respond to it. So that's why, again, the classes are small. This is why, again, we don't encourage to bring in the mobs. It isn't for that kind of a searcher. It's for a searcher who sees that this requires something of the searcher. It requires quite a bit, and therefore, that's what we love about it. Sometimes we have our ups and downs. Some days are better than others, we know, but at least we're on the path, and the world is on the path. I don't want to feel we're just on it. Everyone is, but we are responding toward through science. The others will have to do it in a step-by-step way through the Christ idea, pushing them along, but they will respond also, eventually. They shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, through life experience. All right, so then I want to begin the next big point, is then taking a look at this divine philosophy as it opposes then human philosophy. And that can be seen through these different standpoints of the first degree, the second degree, and the third degree. That's what we find on page 115 and 115 and 116 in the textbook. We'll look at that again from the standpoint of the textbook. But right now, seeing that that Christ idea, what God is as a divine philosophy, as the categories of being, which we're going to study in detail. We're building up to the study in detail of those categories. So I just build the introductory class up gently. So we see then that divine philosophy of what God is has a Christ, and it comes to the world, and it makes the world go from the first degree of the material, which Mrs. Eddy calls unreal, to the second degree of the moral, which we can see is the mental realm, because that moral values are just beliefs. Morality goes on in consciousness. It isn't a physical claim. Morality is a mental state. So we go from the first degree of the physical to the second degree of the morally mental. And finally, we're shoved in by the Christ idea to the third degree of the spiritual. Mrs. Eddy calls the material first degree of the physical unreal. She calls the mental realm a transitional stage. And she calls the third degree reality, as we've seen. Now, the world is being pushed from the first degree, as we've said now, to the second, to the third. And so what we want to see is how the world leaves its spaces of the human philosophy and comes into the divine philosophy of the third degree. And this is done through what is called in the world paradigm shifts. That shifts of paradigm, shifts of worldview. You could say shifts in philosophical standpoints. I like to define the terms that we use in this class, because we can see the language is always changing. The language is always moving towards, we have to keep up with the language of today. So the language of today talks about these shifts in worldviews, these philosophical shifts, as paradigm shifts. So what we mean when we talk about that there are then these different degrees. Mrs. Eddy calls them different degrees of the first degree of the material, the second degree of the morally mental, and the third degree of the spiritual. Today the world would call those degrees paradigms. She would say that we have the first, the material paradigm. We have the mental paradigm. Or we have the spiritual paradigm. And a paradigm, and we have to just keep defining our terms to make it a science. A paradigm is an accepted model for understanding reality. That's a philosophy. It's the material philosophy, you could say, or the material paradigm, or the material degree. It's all different ways of talking about this accepted model for understanding reality, the accepted worldview for understanding reality. That's what a paradigm is. It's a philosophical worldview. It's a philosophical model for understanding reality. It's a generally recognized model for problem solving. So using that term paradigm as a model for understanding reality, a philosophy for understanding reality, we see that the first model or paradigm or philosophy that we have encountered is this material paradigm. Now, what we see is that these paradigms of the material paradigm, the mental paradigm and the spiritual paradigm, they're incompatible. They are not compatible. They're different. That the material paradigm or philosophy is different from the mental paradigm, which is different from the spiritual paradigm.